It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into Extra Innings on the Sports Objective. And with us right now, we have Kyle from LaGrange Barber. What's up, man?
Still trying to thaw out, dude. It was cold out there today.
It was. And we also have Bubba Rosenbaum. What's up, man?
Good evening, guys. Closing in on Raleigh on the way back home.
All right, voice of the ECU baseball team, the Pirates, Corey Glore. Great job this weekend, sir.
Thank you. If you're in Raleigh, Bubba, that means I somehow got out prior to you. I am further down I-40 than you are.
Yeah, so I went to the basketball game.
Yes. That was a heck of a game. Not the finish that we wanted, but that turned into quite a game.
Yeah, Sean Williams knocked down 8 threes and unfortunately had a bad turnover there at the end, but we wouldn't have been in the ball game had it not been for he and Jaden Gardner, for sure.
Yeah, I'm trying to think the last time I heard of someone who made 8 threes in a game. Like, that's crazy. That's pretty wild.
Yeah, well, the good news is that we have Dooley back as coach, and he's a couple years away from really, I think, breaking things open. But a guy that's been 5 years now with the Pirates, breaking things open, and a great start the season, getting the broom out with a sweep of Radford, is Coach Cliff Odwin. What did you think, Corey, for the week? We'll start things off. If you can give your opening statement, you can tell I just went to a press conference. So
I thought you saw a little bit of everything from what this team can do when they put it all together. I still think there were moments that you would say maybe it wasn't all in place, but you saw just how deadly this lineup can be in really all 3 games, but certainly in Friday's action. You saw how potent this bullpen can be today, for sure, and at the back end of game 1 on Friday, you saw those flashes of everything we think this team's capable of that they put into practice over the course of the 3 games. We got a little bit of what we expected in each one.
Yeah, what about as far as the – I wanted to ask you with early on with Burleson, did you think he, on Friday with the very first game, what did you think about him starting, and do you think it's just opening days that they got off to a slow start?
I thought Alec was good. At the plate, he was better than on the mound. I think he wasn't as sharp as we have seen him on the mound before, but I would say that about all 3 starting pitchers this weekend, where neither 3 were as sharp as we know they are. So it could be a little bit of jitters. It could be seeing a pretty good veteran lineup in Radford. It could be a combination of it all. He certainly acclimated himself well as being a 2-way guy who is hitting at the same time as he's pitching, which you don't see a lot around college baseball anymore. But he had a 4-hit day in the game he was starting. I think he'll round into form on the mound. He needed that start to kind of get the cobweb shaken off. And once he gets that curveball really going, then he's going to be just fine. I think it took him a bit to find the off-speed stuff. And then once he found that, the fastball seemed to go. It wasn't all working at once, but he was doing just enough to get the job done. And that's what you need out of Friday guy, is if it's not all working, can you get the job done? And he did.
You talked about the weekend that Alec Burleson had at the plate. Also, Jake Washer, 6 out of 11. Bryson Wohl had a 5-hit weekend. Those were some of the other guys that really stood out at the plate.
Yeah, I think I mentioned to you guys last week about Bryson and what I think he could potentially do this year. And what we saw, it certainly Friday, is everything he can do. The power from both sides of the plate. He's got really good closing speed in the outfield, and we saw that at times over the course of the weekend. This is a really talented kid with a ton of tools, and he flexed his muscle certainly on Friday. And then Jake Washer is just, you talk about a consistent present force in the middle of the lineup. It goes to the bigger factor of how you work your way and manage your way through this ECU order where, all right, if you're able to somehow get through a Packard, a Bryson Worrell, a Spencer Brickhouse, but then right behind that you have Jake Washer, who goes 6-for-11 this weekend, and you have a career 310 hitter right behind him and Brady Lloyd, and then you also work Alec Burleson into the mix where he was bouncing around the lineup all weekend. Someone's going to benefit more often than not from pitchers being worried about throwing to someone above or below you in the lineup. Jake Washer is turned into kind of your typical cleanup guy where very few people are pitching to Spencer Brickhouse right now to start off his junior year, and so Jake gets the benefit of getting pitches over the heart of a plate, and he's not going to miss them. He's that good of a hitter. He's that talented of a guy, and so he had a nice breakout weekend, but it's a weekend that we're used to seeing from him.
Kind of expanding on the points you made earlier, how there are kind of three different ball games from the standpoint. Game one, you had a game that was 2-2 going into the bottom of the sixth, then Brickhouse hit the monster two-run shot to right field, and then we assumed command of the game from there. Then game two, you had the 10-run second inning, and then today you were behind 3-0 after three innings, and then you saw Cliff playing a little small ball, getting a run on the board. And then we're still down 3-1 going into the bottom of the sixth, but then you manufacture a couple of runs, tie things up, and then find a way to get that winning run in the seventh.
Yeah, I mean, you name a way to push runs across, and the Pirates found the way to do it this weekend. And I thought the key of this whole weekend was that 10-run second inning in game two, because that allowed almost everybody to play in that game from about the fifth inning onward. You name the new guy, they were in the field in some capacity. And so that allowed, you know, to get some jitters out of everybody's stomach of getting collegiate game number one out of your way. And then you see today where Thomas Francisco gets the start at third, and he had a good day at the plate. He's more comfortable there because he got a little bit of time Friday already. So I'm not sure Friday could have gone much better given the circumstances where you have to play a tight game into the later innings and you pull it out, and then you just put a barrage on to start and really coast your way to a 2-0 start. And then a game like today where it was really difficult figuring out the Radford freshman, Cole Dunn, on the hill. He was very good, and he was really sawing off this Pirates lineup. And once you get into the bullpen, their team was almost kind of biding time a little bit until the freshman hit his limit, and he did. And then the bullpen came in, which is Radford's sore spot, and the Pirates jumped on it and were able to put pressure on. They didn't bring in a run with a hit until Jake's go-ahead RBI in the seventh, but they were able to keep putting the pedal down and essentially tighten the vise around the Radford bullpen, which is something that they did Friday in game one, in the middle of game two, and then late today to pull off this comeback. It was a little bit every type of game that you'll probably see during the course of the year. The Pirates played this weekend, and they got three wins out of it.
A couple of numbers backing up what you're saying, Corey. You take a look. On the mound, we had 11 different pitchers. See action, no pitcher was used more than once. And then you also had, I think it was 13 different players have a base hit, and 9 of those had more than one base hit. So, and that just backs up what you were saying as far as getting a lot of guys action and then the depth of this team.
Yeah, spreading the wealth around, and if you can get that done in the opening weekend and get production and get wins to boot, that bodes well for Wednesday when you're going to have probably some unknowns out there Wednesday in Buies Creek about, you know, who's going to be on the mound, what everything's going to look like in the bullpen following the starter. You might see some different pieces out in the field in the first midweek game of the year. But you have, you know, all the talk heading into the year about trusting the new guys and having this depth and not being worried about a guy slotting in place of someone. I mean, it was put into motion this weekend where you have so many people, so many guys in different spots jump in midstream, come in for injuries, whatever the case might be, and they all did the job. So that's why this team, that's why his coaching staff is so beholden and believes so strongly in the depth 1 through 35 on this roster. And we saw it. We saw it over the course of the weekend.
So pretty much a price of rank, if you look at it, depending on which poll would be around 11, I think is the highest. Do you think the Pirates will be able to break the top 10? I know that it's not something that the coaching staff or players are worried about, but those of us that are fans in the media, that's something that I guess is good, something good to talk about.
Yeah, I'm not sure. They're ranked 11 in two of the polls. There have been some interesting results around college baseball this weekend already. I mean, you can look in conference and see what UConn just did to Louisville over the weekend in Florida and took 2 of 3 against the top 5 team. You know, whether they move up or down, it's a 3-game sweep at home against a team that should be in the mix in the Big South, but it's a team that when you look on paper, you're expected to win, and you did. You grabbed all 3. Whether or not that moves the needle of one of the 80 polls that exists, I'm not entirely sure. I think you hit the nail on the head, Kyle. This team, that they don't care about what number is next to their name, if there is a number next to their name. So if it does change by this time tomorrow or late tonight, whenever all these polls get released, they won't notice. And if they do notice, they won't talk about it because it's not something that is even close to being under the radar. They might move up a spot in some of these polls, but, you know, a big jump after a weekend like this, it requires a lot of stuff happening around them, too. And some stuff has fallen, some stuff hasn't. We'll see. But if they move up, it's probably not going to be by much.
As far as can we talk about the games coming up, too, that I want to make sure that we want to remind fans this is something we're going to be doing every Sunday. So we'll be having different guests on, and hopefully Corey can, but if you can't, we understand. But something we'll be doing for the baseball team all season long, extra innings on the sports objective. Corey, can you give us kind of a preview of the games we have coming up? I know it's, again, the coaching staff are not going to be worried about looking ahead, but certainly I know the fans will be about next week for the Pirates.
Yeah, I mean, you got Campbell on Wednesday. We'll right. put a weather-pending asterisk on that. If you just look at the forecast for the week, it's messy. But I hope that game goes off as scheduled because that has the potential to be a really fun game in Buies Creek. Campbell won the conference last year. They got a lot of that talent coming back this year. That ballpark in Buies Creek, one, it's a beautiful park with all the renovations they've done there. It's a smaller park, and that place gets filled to the brim when the Pirates are there. That environment is one of the better ones you'll come across during the course of the year when those two teams meet in Buies Creek. They have a lot in that lineup that can cause problems. And if that game is able to go off as scheduled, that should be a blast, and I would recommend if you can make it down there, get tickets now. That place will sell out, and make your way down there. And then Monmouth comes in this weekend. I think the biggest factor this weekend is that it's 4 games this weekend, where it's Monmouth and Air Force and the Monday afterward. And you had a doubleheader to start off the year on opening day that already puts a strain and a test on just how deep your roster is and how strong physically you are entering the year. 4 games in 4 days is abnormal. And so, you know, Monmouth is middle of the pack team coming in. Air Force has been good, not recently, but they had been in the past. It's a long trip for them. These are opponents that you are better than on paper, but does the strain of all those games in 4 days catch up? I think that's the next question for the Pirates this weekend, is how they can manage all of that, the wraparound with 4 games in 4 days. Is it something that they haven't done in years? They have not had a weekend like this upcoming in a good long while. So it's going to be a pretty fascinating weekend. It's going to be another kind of a box to check in my book, this about what this team can do, how they balance themselves, how they make it through a grind that will be this coming weekend after a road trip to a team that is high quality, that will contend and should be a favorite to win their conference and be back in the NCAA tournament. This is going to be a very intriguing week for me.
Dave, a little bit about this week's opponents. Of course, on Wednesday, like we said, and we have Campbell. Campbell went 1-2 this weekend down in Conway, or I say they've gone 1-2. They're 1-1. They defeated Maryland 10-6 on Friday, and they lost 8-7 to VCU yesterday, and they're currently trailing 12th-ranked Coastal Carolina 9-2 in the sixth. And then you had Monmouth. They were actually down here in Cary at the USA Baseball training facility, and they were swept by Penn State 1-0, 7-0, and 6-4.
Yeah, and Penn State is not a world beater in the Big Ten. The Campbell win over Maryland is worth keeping an eye on because those are two teams that are on the Pirates' schedule this year. Campbell, of course, and then the trip to Maryland in a month. Monmouth, they were in town a couple of years ago, and the Pirates took 2 of 3 from that one. So the thing that stands out to me from that series, this was one sort of triple play on the Pirates, and that was after the Pirates halted a no-hitter in the seventh inning. So it was a strange end. That was a Sunday game, but I remember Kirk Morgan broke up the no-hitter, and then Luke Boca lined into a triple play one batter after that. So that's the memory I have from the Monmouth Hawks coming in 2016. Now they'll be back in town this weekend. And it's a matchup that the Pirates should be better than on paper. Baseball's a funny sport, and you never know what could happen. You never know weather-wise how things could change like it did this past weekend. It's how this team will adjust to everything that's thrown its way and then come back on Monday and take on Air Force. So it's a five-game week right off the bat here, the first full week of the season. So what the gas level will be in the tanks of these guys by this time next week is going to be interesting to see.
When you take a look at Monmouth, and they're actually coached by a Pirate, one of Coach O's former players, and we'll be catching up with him later in the week when we're taking a look at that series.
To be honest, I haven't dove into Monmouth just yet. I mean, that'll be coming up later on in the week. I've done a little digging already into Campbell since they're coming up first, but Monmouth I haven't had a deep dive into just yet. The reason why they're coming in, I would imagine, is part of that tie to ECU and having that connection there to bring in one of these early season weekend series, but Monmouth is coming up. Scouting report's coming up in just a couple of days for them.
Corey, earlier you talked about the way the bullpen performed. You talked about the tremendous efforts like today we saw from Evan Voliva and Sam Lanier. And Sam Lanier was someone who struggled quite a bit a season ago after having pitched well earlier in his career. Talk a little bit about those two guys and what their emergence mean for this pitching staff.
Right. I think if you can get kind of the two elder statesmen in that relief corps to be guys, to be dudes that you trust at the end of a game, then you're set up well. I mean, that's what set up the Pirates so nicely last year when you had Davis Kirkpatrick and Ryan Ross towards the back end, and then Zach Barnes, a junior, took over as well late in the season. So if you can have Evan Voliva, who looked dynamic today, and then you have Sam Lanier, who I said on the broadcast, and I'll maintain, when he's on, his slider is the best pitch on the staff. Like, that is a vicious slider, and it was really humming along today. If you can get your older guys in the bullpen to help groom and grow the young depth that's sitting in that bullpen, then you're going to like where you sit. And to get out of this weekend without using a couple of those guys in the bullpen, you didn't see Jake Kuchmaner this weekend. You didn't see Gavin Williams this weekend. I anticipate you'll probably see them Wednesday in Buies Creek in some capacity. To be able to ease your younger guys into the flow of 2019 and bring out your veterans that have had up and down careers, in Greenville, and to have them look like that at the start, that's you'll take that any day of the week. They were awesome today.
I know earlier you referenced what UConn did today. I knew they had taken that series from Louisville down in Florida. Are you aware? What are some other results from around the American?
Yeah, I haven't kept up fully with the scoreboard today since I left the park. I know Tulane and Houston are all going for sweeps today. UCF did finish off their sweep. I did see that at Siena. And USF was in a rubber match with Samford today. Wichita State, in my book, is the team to kind of keep an eye on, not necessarily for good reasons. They're gonna have some issues this year. They lose everybody out of their lineup that made them such a potent offensive club a season ago, and they could not find any help on the mound to help combat that last year when they snuck into the conference tournament. They were getting knocked around in Arizona in their tournament over the weekend. So they're gonna be kind of fighting in the bottom tooth and nail. But teams like Memphis, who was in a rubber match with Indiana today, Cincinnati was in a rubber match with Florida Atlantic down in Florida today. But I think that the teams at the top that you expect to be challenging at the top all pretty much took care of their business this weekend. The Tulane and Houston winning walk-offs two nights in a row, you could say, how could they not be a little bit better than their competition? But do you want games like that early on in the year, in my book, to see how your team operates late through clutch situations? And Tulane and Houston kind of came through yesterday and on Friday. It's going to be a fun battle at the top, because I think it's more than four deep. I really do. I think, you know, when you get into five and six in this conference, those are going to be teams that will pick anybody off any day of the week.
Like you said, I noticed that Tulane had won those two close ball games with George Washington. Who was Houston playing?
Houston was hosting Northwestern State, who's a good club, and a team that's been in the tournament recently. I believe they were in last year. And so that's a nice series win for Houston there. And they did it in walk-off fashion both nights. So, you know, a lot of these teams are scheduling schools, ECU included, that on paper you should be able to take care of, but, you know, in practice, you don't know what you're going to get first weekend of the year from any of these clubs, how teams come out, how rusty things are, how injured teams might be. And so the American's done a good job taking care of business here in the first weekend of the year.
Some other future opponents on the non-conference slate, of course, the first week of March, we go down to Mississippi, play a single game against Ole Miss, Mississippi State. I noticed this weekend, I believe it was Ole Miss, was facing another future opponent, Wright State, and they split the first two games of that series. Do you have any idea what was taking place today in Oxford?
I don't. I do know Wright State was having fun in Oxford over the weekend. I don't know what happened today. Yeah, Wright State is now a usual tournament team. And so to get them, I believe they are second in the Keith LeClair Classic of the Saturday game. And then you swing around and you take on these Mississippi clubs the following week. It's funny. I think a lot of people looked at the home slate and non-conference and said, oh, this isn't too terribly inspiring. But you have some legitimate under-the-radar names that are in the mix in the home schedule, and Wright State's at the top of that list. And to go into Oxford and to have the success that they have had so far this weekend, that it's a very difficult proposition, and they've been able to do it. So when they come in two weekends' time, that Saturday game, it's going to be a lot like last year when Missouri State was that Saturday game in the LeClair Classic, and Missouri State won that game. It's that type of program was always around and now has become a tournament mainstay. If the LeClair Classic is on your radar, but you can only make it out to one day, I would highly recommend that Saturday game for sure.
Like you say about Wright State, I do recall, as you're saying, in the last two or three years, and I think they won an early season series, I think either at South Carolina or Clemson, and then came close to taking one from the other. And like they really made some noise early in the year.
Yeah, and this is the team that in 2016 made the Super Regionals and that really burst them onto the scene, and it caught a lot of eyes nationally, and they've stuck around, and they've had a coaching change since. But to be able to stick around, they play in a league that's gettable. They play in the Horizon, and that's not the strongest baseball conference you're going to see. But to have the staying power that they've had for a program of that size says a lot about now what's being built up there in Ohio. So that's going to be a unique test for that one-off game on Saturday in 2 weeks' time.
Corey, I had to step away from the line for a few minutes, so if it's been brought up, I apologize. Talking about the American in general, this weekend, Connecticut, UConn took 2 out of 3 from Louisville. Pretty impressive to see the Huskies go on the road and take 2 out of 3 from the Cardinals.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit, but that, you can't overestimate the impact of that series for UConn, not just for that team, but for the league, which still deals with a perception issue around the sport. Even though last year they were the number 4 RPI conference in the nation, there's still, whether it's an ignorance, whether it's a misunderstanding about the quality of baseball in this league, I mean, it didn't take a surgeon, a brain surgeon last year and say, you know, UConn should have hosted a regional. They were that high quality that UCF should have been in the tournament. They were that type of team. But there's, you know, it's fighting uphill with that battle, trying to get the realization out there of what this conference is. So to have opening weekend, have one of the contenders in the league take on a top 5 team and a challenger atop the ACC and to win the series in a neutral site affair, I mean, that's an early shot across the bow for the American. That, you know, we'll see how much attention it gets. It will certainly raise an eyebrow or two. We'll see if it's just kind of shoved off to the side come mid-May when the committee starts discussing all of this. We know it probably doesn't take a lot for the committee to discount some of the accomplishments that this conference has on the baseball side of things. And that's where you could probably use a stronger push from the league, too, to promote it. But that's a different story for a different podcast. But the fact of the matter is, for UConn to go win a series that they weren't anticipated to win, they'll get some votes. They'll jump into some rankings now you would envision after a weekend like that. And all that does is boost the perception of this league. Even more around the country, even if we know how good it is here.
Tag on to that about the league. I wonder how much of that has to do with just the whole Power 5 narrative bleeding over from college football into other sports. I mean, it's really become silly because in baseball, that whole power thing, while I guess it does lend itself some to baseball, not as much as in football and even basketball. I think it's something that the American can compete with, you know, with pretty much any league in America in baseball.
Yeah, I mean, I was asked not too long ago about just the level of the American in the nation, and I would take the American Conference over the Big Ten right now in the sport. And
oh, absolutely.
I think you could have a pretty stiff argument about the Big 12 and the comparisons with the American just at the top. The Big 12 might have a little bit stronger in the middle. We'll see how it plays out this year. And they have World Series contenders every year. The American hasn't been able to say that just yet. But it does boil down to the Power 5 term is a football thing. But and generally speaking, Power 5 is in relation to the amount of money in those conferences and how they use that to really enhance their other sports. And so you still have that moniker that exists, even though it's misplaced in baseball, it's very misplaced in basketball. It still is an element that hangs over that comes from the football world. I think you also have the situation where, you know, the selection committee in baseball is still pretty heavily rooted in the world of Power 5 schools. And so there is still just a natural perception that it's about when putting teams in, when leaving teams out, when giving teams host sites. It still exists a little bit. It is waning in this sport. I think it started when, in the old days, the Conference USA, when ECU was bumming around in there, and you had just a pretty strong conference, 1-8. And when you look out west and you see the Big West and all those smaller conferences out there churn out a Fullerton or an Irvine, you have Coastal Carolina in the Sun Belt now. I mean, it's all these the tops of these leagues are catching up to the quote unquote Power Fives, and so, you know, May is gonna, you know, whatever happens Memorial Day happens, but it doesn't hurt to have a team from the American win a series against a team from the ACC like UConn just did. It helped ECU last year when they took 2 of 3 from North Carolina, and this will no doubt help UConn's cause as long as they do their business this year.
Yeah, just go ahead, Bubba.
I was just going to say, talking about a marquee series win over the ACC, and you bring up the Tar Heels, the USF, as you mentioned earlier, they were going for a series win today over a quality Samford program, and they were able to get that series win, taking down the Bulldogs 4-1. But here in a week or two, they'll be at Boschmer Stadium taking on the Tar Heels, who were projected to be right there with Louisville vying for the ACC.
Yeah, that's I believe that's the return of a home and home. North Carolina opened the year in Tampa last year, and USF lost that series, if I recall. North Carolina grabbed, I think, the final 2 of that weekend series, and they'll come up here. You also have, I believe it's this coming weekend, Tulane hosts Ole Miss for a weekend. So there's another opportunity, albeit at home, for the American to kind of flex their muscle again. I mean, it's rare to have these opportunities where these big boy schools that are always contending for World Series say, yeah, let's do a home and home. And so for North Carolina to agree to it with USF, that's great for the game. It's great for the conference. To have Tulane host Ole Miss for a couple of games, that's even better. They, you know, when the Pirates put Maryland on the schedule, they were in the Big Ten championship discussion, and they might be again this year. They have struggled a little bit to start the year, but it's series like that all they do is boost the level of what the American's capable of. If USF can go up to Chapel Hill and grab a series, then feather in the cap of that team, who should be contending again in the conference. That will be a fun one in a couple of weeks' time. It's series like this that really make college baseball special in the first part of the year. This is not stuff you get a lot in other sports where you have collisions like this in weekend series.
And Corey, that's what's so special about college baseball is, I hate to use the term parity, but there is a lot of parity in college baseball where teams, when you're talking about the Fullertons and Irvines out in California, they would not be on the radar like obviously in college football. But in baseball, there's more of a level playing field.
Yeah, and part of it is also this kind of the nature of the sport and the schedule it needs to put in place. You have 56 games that you need to schedule. And, you know, those one-off games on weeknights, you're going to schedule close. You're going to schedule regional foes. And for ECU, that means you schedule in the ACC, and you get these one-off games against Carolina. You get home and home with Duke this year. You usually have NC State on the schedule. That's not the case this year. But then you can also flip to the other side of the coin, and we talked about Campbell already, and Campbell sees ECU the same way ECU sees Carolina right now, and Campbell also gets Carolina on their schedule, and so you have all of these really good programs. Throw Wilmington into the mix. I throw UNC Greensboro into the mix at times. I mean, all these really good programs that don't get all the attention necessarily day in and day out from around the sport nationally, but they get these opportunities to make their presence felt. And that's why these weeknight games have a little bit of a special air to them where, yeah, there might be Johnny Holstaff days, and they might take 4 hours, but there's an element to those games that doesn't exist in conference play. They're different animals, and they allow for people to turn their heads and raise their eyebrows a little bit and see what's happening when teams that you wouldn't anticipate playing each other meet for nine innings on a Tuesday night. You get the Fullertons and the Irvines and Long Beach State, they play the Pac-12 powers, and that's the uniqueness of the sport, where it's standard to have meetings like this during the course of a season, whereas in college basketball, you're lucky if you get opportunities like this once in a non-conference year, let alone, seven times like they'll get in college baseball.
Corey, have you ever, when we're talking about scheduling, and it's probably a better question for Cliff, but I don't know, have you ever heard anybody around the program talk about why East Carolina and Coastal Carolina got together and played each other on a regular basis?
I have not. It's a question that I have thought of to myself, but I haven't gone out there to ask. My initial theory would be that the trip would be far enough away where there would want to be a series put in place, whether it's like two games in a midweek or a weekend. I wouldn't think that the Pirates or the Chanticleers would want to drive for a one-off.
You can make it in 2 hours and 50 minutes.
Yeah, that's right on the edge of from what I have heard from and talked with Coach Godwin, not about Coastal specifically, but just in general. That's right on the edge in terms of driving distance for a one-off game that this team, this program's comfortable with doing. I remember my first year behind the mic, they had a one-off game at High Point, which, as Bubba knows, as he's on the same drive I am right now, that's not a short trip from Greenville to High Point. That trip to Elon in Burlington,
right,
is about the edge of where they're comfortable with driving for a one-off game. So for Coastal Carolina, which is just outside that range, it would have to be a setup like what they set up with College of Charleston a few years ago, where they go down there for spring break and play two games. And I would love to see that, and I think both programs would love to see that, but it's just not lining up. You also have the factor that Coastal Carolina hosts at least three tournaments to start the year on the weekend, and so you can't really just go down there for a weekend series. They have a ton of tournaments to do down there. So I would love to see it happen. I think it's overdue, and whether that's the reasoning why, that's leads me to believe that's why it hasn't happened. Hopefully something can happen over the next couple of seasons. That makes sense. The
North
Carolina has the third most
prospects
that are drafted in the MLB draft from last year.
A lot of these guys stay in the state.
North Carolina,
I mean, Charlotte
for a high school, or if they don't sign at a high school, and that's why you wind up with a Campbell being a power in the Big South, and you wind up with Greensboro and the SoCon and all these smaller schools. You wind up with maybe the two best pitchers in the nation at Elon. I mean, that's how you get these types of talent at the schools that you maybe don't anticipate, because there's just such a wealth of talent in this state that you run out of programs that you wish you'd want to see ECU play, because there are just so many high-quality ones that are around this state that you're
going
to have to leave some of them out.
As far as one question I had, you were talking to Coach O. Can you talk about the, as far as NCAA play is concerned, with East Carolina at Clark LeClaire?
Yeah, instant replay is now in place in college baseball. If everyone has the technological capabilities to do it, which ECU does, and each team now gets two challenges a game, and we saw it used this weekend. Each team didn't use the challenge. Each team lost the challenge. But what happened, I think, Friday was a call that was incorrect initially. There wasn't a great angle to see if it was correct after replay, and so they stuck with the call. Two pitches later, Bryson Worrell alleviated any issues with that by hitting a home run. But after that, it kind of sparked a little bit of a hope that a fourth umpire would come into the fold now for games at Clark LeClaire, because a fourth umpire would have seen that very clearly, that it was fair. And starting today, a fourth umpire is now in place for all games at Clark LeClaire, not just conference games coming up. That being said, there was still a challenge in place today. Radford lost their challenge on Brady Lloyd advancing on a wild pitch. it's all going to boil down to whether or not you get the right camera angle set up. And from what I've, from what Cliff Godwin said before the year, it's ECU and it's Wichita State that have the capabilities to do instant replay now, which is a little bit surprising. It's not more, because I know the setup at Tulane is very conducive for it, so I'm a little shocked they're not participating in it. But now you're going to have pretty much everything covered instant replay-wise. Well, you'll have the fourth outfielder, or you'll have the fourth umpire, so hopefully you won't need it as much. But there are a good dozen plays now that are up for grabs in terms of replay, whether it's fair foul, whether it's plays in the bases, you know, trap ball in the outfield, whether runners move past another runner, where people should be. There's a lot of stuff up for grabs now, and over the course of the weekend, we actually saw it coming to practice.
So West Carolina and Wichita are the only two schools in the American that have the current capabilities for replay?
That are putting it in place this year to have on hand. The option was available in the American last year, but only ECU was actually able to kind of do it, and so it was only for non-conference games where it was available, unless both teams agreed to it. Now the American says if you have it, you can do it, and ECU is already on board, and Wichita State, which has a really nice setup there in at X Stadium, they're doing it now as well. There are some places that I understand. UConn is obviously, they don't have the ability to do it with that part. Memphis does not with their setup there. But places like Tulane, like Houston, like the Florida schools, I thought they might have tried to jump on board a little bit there, but apparently they have not for 2019.
When is UConn supposed to start construction on their new ballpark?
They have supposedly started it, and it's supposed to open next year. Now, I don't know if that has been altered because of the recent news about their athletic budget problems, but I knew from everything I heard last year when we were up there that they had the money secured, that they had raised the money to actually break ground on the ballpark, and it's not where the current park is. It's across the street on the athletic campus, so it wouldn't disrupt the team right now. But from what everything I've heard, it's still in motion to be done for 2020. Whether or not a $40 million budget deficit ends that, that I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me, but hopefully they can plow through and finish that thing.
That's definitely a debate they're having right now with whether to go FCS for football. Or we had that with talk with a guy that does a daily podcast with AAC, and that's C. Austin Cox. We had that a couple of days ago, but it's going to be interesting to see how that whole athletic program, how things shake out with that. Corey, I wanted to ask you before we let you go, I wanted to ask about, are you up for some more movie lines? I can put the guys on the spot too. Are you up for some more for this week, or do you want to give a few days to think about it, or?
Well, I'll say this. I'm always up for more. The problem is me jotting them down while driving is probably an unwise decision at the moment.
The conversation is being recorded, Corey.
That's valid. That's valid. And Bubba came in the clutch for me this weekend with the movie lines. If you want to fire them to me, by all means, go for it here.
And we can email you the how about if we email it to them, guys?
No, let's make Corey listen to the podcast.
Who's to say I don't already?
Well,
we're trying to torture him. He's a friend. We don't want to torture him, so he doesn't have to listen. I was just wondering if you guys had some. And by the way, before I forget, I want to definitely thank Misty Grover. She listens to our podcast, and she's the first winner. And I know you got hers out on Friday, right, from the Princess Bride.
Yes, I got the Pit of Despair out on Friday. I believe that was the line. Yes, that was hers, Pit of Despair, yes.
Yeah, so congratulations. All right. In fact, she actually already has season tickets, but she's doing like what a lot of us are trying to do, and that is invite friends to get more people involved at ECU games. And so I thought that was tremendous that that's how she used our seats. So I thought that was tremendous for her, and appreciate her very much. And I know that there's a lot of folks out there that are probably listening to us, our very first promotion for baseball. We'll continue to do that, and we'll have various prizes and different things that we can do for the movie winners. So we can talk about that. But
Dave, I have one.
Okay.
Big fan of we've talked about Charlie Sheen, of course, in Major League, but the Charlie Sheen movie with Chris Tucker, Money Talks.
Yes.
Yep.
A line that he had in that movie when he was James Russell. Okay. Quite an operation you've got. Tell me what is going on here.
That's a good one, and one that's very subtle, too. Not a lot of people would pick that up, I feel. So I like that one.
Do you have any, is everybody on board at East Carolina with the movie lines? Are they cool with it, or have you heard any? I know the players like Spencer Brickhouse loves it, and Coach O, I know, is a big fan of it. Is everybody on board with that? I think it adds a lot to the broadcast.
Yeah, as long as I get them in, which I struggled with Friday night, game two, but I got them in today. No, it's fun, and people seem to be taking to it, so I will continue to do it.
All right, Kyle, you're a great movie guy. I'm thinking of some, so I'm going to put it on you. Do you have any?
Oh, man, I'm sitting here. I'm racking my brain. The only thing I can come up with is really not even that good. But I'll throw it out there, Corey. From the movie Roadhouse, the Patrick Swayze, Sam Elliott classic Roadhouse. The end of the movie when they kill the lead villain. This is our town. This is our town, and don't you forget it.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Because we have Mammoth coming in on the week. That would be good for the weekend, right?
I won't rule that out of, say, the Pirates get a win in Buies Creek on Wednesday. I'm just saying, I'll put that out there right now.
Oh, wow. That's actually a good one. I hadn't thought about that movie in a while, Kyle.
Yeah.
I'm glad that's the line you chose in that movie. I know there's another very famous one that's not radio friendly.
Yeah, that's what I was getting a little bit nervous because I know the movie. I didn't know where you were going.
I don't know which line you referred to, Corey. But there's a line in that movie I love that would be great for a baseball game, but it involves a swear word, so I can't use it.
Yeah, mine involves a swear word as well, and things that a guy did in his previous time may be locked up. So that's the line.
About ripping somebody's throat out?
Not quite that one. Probably best just leave it there.
Okay.
Hey, Bubba, what about you? Hey, by the way, Corey.
Another good one.
Bubba already have a line, Dave. What about you?
All right, let's see. I had some written down here from last week I never used, and I'm trying to go back in my – I'm racking my brain because I didn't even mention them to Corey, so that's why I'm trying to – I had them written
down. All
right,
Bubba, you got something else?
I'm just being honest. I did. Bubba, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry. I guess I lost you for a minute.
You got something else, Bubba?
Yeah, I had another one. It was from another Chris Tucker movie, Rush Hour.
This is all Chris Tucker.
Yeah. Last week it was Caddyshack. This week it was Chris Tucker movies. Detective James Carter, Chris Tucker's character in that movie, it was just pretty simple, but wipe yourself off, man.
Wipe yourself off, man.
Wow. Okay. These are so subtle, they're almost subliminal, the lines coming from Bubba today. All right. Yeah.
I want to make things easy on you.
Yeah, we're in a really good mood, Corey, because we got a sweep and definitely got the broom out today. So I think everybody's in a good mood when it comes to EC baseball.
My favorite Chris Tucker line. I don't think Corey could get away with it, though. It would be hysterical. Don't ever touch a black man's radio.
Yeah, that would not.
That's a great line, though.
Yeah, we want to make sure that we want to make sure Corey can continue to not only do movie lines but keep his job. So
yes. Speaking of Chris Tucker lines, this is one that you always hear used at the ballpark, and it's not so it's used so much that it's probably not the best one to use, but you always hear the one, you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth when opposing coaches go out to talk to the pitcher.
Yeah, I don't think that came up last year. No, I think about it. Is when you said Rush Hour, Bubba, I immediately thought of that line. And I was kind of circling back into my brain, which is a dangerous idea, but I did it anyway. And Yeah, that one I don't recall. So if that's going to be thrown into the hopper this year, we can find a way to work it in.
Good stuff.
Yeah,
we're going to run out of Chris Tucker movies for too long.
Yeah.
I mean, how many has the guy made? Let's be honest.
Friday. We got to get him up with something from Friday.
Where I thought you were going, Kyle, with Friday.
Oh, man.
If you want to break out a line from The Fifth Element, that'd be quite a deep cut.
Hey, whatever. Yeah, whatever works.
Yeah.
Whatever works. All right.
We got a few movie lines there. Hey, Corey, did you get in Loud Thunder Heavy Rain?
Yes, that came up today. Yes, they got in today. I don't know if I skirted it a little bit, but I just with the rain in the forecast, I just alluded to what might be coming. Yes, but that one got in.
All right. He's a great artist, Cody Jinx. So I listened to that song last night. So that was
I'm trying to turn everybody on to Cody Jinx. This is soon going to become the Cody Jinx objective.
No, it's not. Unless Cody pays for it. Well, Corey, I know that I appreciate you, man. I know you've been driving down there and getting back to Winston-Salem. By the way, one final question. How's ECU baseball received in Winston-Salem, being where you live?
I think you would be surprised how much attention is on it out here. There is a large ECU alum base in the Triad, and I see a lot more purple and gold cling stickers and bumper stickers and flags than you would probably think out this direction. It rivals the level of North Carolina stuff that I see out here, App State stuff that I see out here. There are eyes out here on what's going on with ECU baseball, no question about it.
Well, give us some love there to the fans of Forsyth County, I'll pronounce it correctly, and then I want to say hello to all the fans, Pirate fans, hello in Winston-Salem. So, Corey, man, you do a great job. We appreciate you, too, with hanging out with us, and definitely drive safe the rest of the way, and we'll talk to you again next week if you could come on.
Gentlemen, you have taken me all the way to Winston-Salem. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, have a great
night,
man.
Corey.
Appreciate you, buddy.
Thanks, fellas.
All right. Bye-bye. Wow, that was great. Corey Glore here on the Sports Objective, the extra innings, guys. And very excited about this show. And he really, what a way to start the show. And eventually we'll get to where we can actually, the capabilities, we're working on that now. For in the next few weeks where we'll have live callers. How about that?
That'll be great. Yeah, I think the listeners hopefully will be able to call in and talk about the games. That's something you can't do. I mean, after football season, there's, you know, Pirate Radio does such a great job in the fifth quarter, but there's really no interaction except on message boards or in person where fans can get their thoughts and feelings out. So it'll be fun to do that, and hopefully we'll get a good response from Pirate Nation when we do that.
No doubt about it. And I know,
no
Bobby,
doubt.
You've been –
no doubt. Let's do crossbones.
Yeah. Bubba's actually been working really hard on this project, and I know we've got a lot of great – I want to mention, too, one thing that I want to mention is we've got a very special podcast coming up the beginning of March, don't we, Bubba? Actually, the 28th.
Yes, the week of the Keith LeClair Classic, we'll be talking to a number of individuals who are either family or – very closely connected to Coach LeClair. We'll talk to his widow, Lynn, and then we'll also talk to his daughter, Audrey. And then we'll be catching up with Chuck Young, who's with Sportswork Ministries and was team pastor. And so we'll catch up with those folks and more.
In fact, Chuck came about that time, if my memory serves me right, that Coach LeClair came to East Carolina. I think it was around 97 is when Coach LeClair.
Yeah, 97 or 98.
Yeah, and Coach Chuck came around that time, so I know that he would know Coach LeClair and know him very well. So we love Chuck. He came out to the nostalgia party. He's been the team pastor, chaplain, if you will, for many years for ECU, and what a great guy. You look at stuff he puts on LinkedIn every day. Just tell us about where his heart is, and definitely we'll pray for Kyle, right?
Pray for me.
I'm just messing with you.
Pray for me. Wow.
Yeah. Can we joke a little bit?
Yeah, he's good.
But I thought it was an excellent debut for extra innings. Not only do we talk about the series with the Pirates, but then took a good look around the American and what took place on opening weekend.
Well, that's your opinion, Bubba. I personally think it went horrible. No, I'm joking. It was great. Corey did a great job. I don't think we would have had much of a show today without Corey. So that was – Corey helped us a lot here with our first extra innings.
Appreciate Corey very much. And I know that fans, by the way, you can always – Bubba, I want to mention social media because I know there's a way they can get questions in maybe for Corey or different guests we have on. They can do that, right, for Twitter?
Yeah, if you want to submit a movie line, it's at thesportsobj thesportsobj@gmail.com or, of course, Facebook as well.
Yeah, and if it's a movie line, tweet them at Corey also, at Corey Gore.
Yeah, we want to make sure that he does such a great – it's fun. I love –
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be movie lines. You know, he'll music song lines from songs, anything from pop culture. If you're a wrestling fan, there's a lot of great lines from wrestling over the years. Throw those at him too.
Yeah, Corey mixed in a lot of wrestling lines a year ago.
Yep.
But we'll have to keep it coming for him. And of course, folks, we want to remind you of all the great podcasts and the content. Bubba, we've got a ton of great content out over the last 7 days. It's been very busy for us, right?
Yeah, earlier in the show, when we were talking to Corey and talked about what the Pirates have coming up this week, and so we'll be talking to the head coaches at Campbell and Monmouth. But then, like you said, and we caught up with Coach O prior to opening weekend. So if you haven't heard that, the Pirates have played 3 games, but definitely go back and check out that interview with Coach O and Seth Simmons. Seth Simmons still pitching in minor league baseball or is a free agent, but he's going to be signing with somebody. He feels pretty confident. So definitely go back and listen to Seth.
Appreciate Coach Gary Gilmore, too, for Coastal Carolina on our latest episode, for a previous episode, actually now.
Hey, by the way, if Coach Gary Gilmore ever decided to get out of baseball and coach women's softball, his players would be the Gilmore girls.
He's been waiting all extra innings for that. We had to go extra innings, and he waited all.
Just came to me.
Just came to you? Okay. I give you major props then.
That's
really good.
Yeah.
You didn't stay up all night for that?
No.
Okay. All right.
No,
just wondering.
Popped in my head. I'm creative
all right.
like that. Yeah.
Well, you got it. Yes, sir. That's why a lot of people listen to this podcast. And before we let everybody go, I want to mention, too, by the way, guys, I appreciate this. We've got a lot of people listening right now, and this month is off to a great start, right, Bubba?
Yeah, that's what, like we had discussed in January, we had right at 4,000 listens, but well on our way to topping that in February, even though it's 3 days shorter. So we appreciate all the listeners.
No excuses, right?
No excuses. No doubt.
All right, guys. We can do it. Hey, we can do it. It sounds good to me, especially with Pirates off to a great start. We'll have our thoughts in the next couple of days on the basketball game and what we have coming up for that. But every Sunday night, remember, this is extra innings. So we went extra innings. Thank you guys very much. Appreciate you spending time with us. And I appreciate you, Kyle and Bubba. And until the next time, you've been listening to Extra Innings right here on the Sports Objective.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.